Welcome, Spadels and Lely Junes and other imaginary creatures that I've just made up off the top of my head. Welcome back. It's Rack Addicts by the River. I mean, Rack Addicts After Hours. We're using the cars again, the remote COVID-friendly podcasting solution brought to you by various car manufacturers. We've got Pete. We've got Telmo. My name's Ben. It's Rack Addicts After Hours time. My apologies for confusing you about what podcast you were listening to. But welcome. We are here, poised on the brink of lockdown 2.0. Thank you. Thank you, Boris. Thank you. But we're all here, and we can still podcast together, and there's still synth news to get through. And Telmo, we haven't had a Telmo's Theory Music Educated Music Man Corner for quite a while. Do I hear the rumblings that there may be a bit of a jingle a-brewing over there?
Oh, there is. There is indeed. A jingle is done. Well, obviously, it should be with you at any time soon. This week was quite an exciting week for me, theoretically.
Yeah,
wise.
Take us through it.
So I've first got introduced into the sort of like a fusion orchestra last year, and this year I've got into a module that's not necessarily assessed, but it's very interesting, and it's something that I would like to talk about specifically in this little corner of mine, which is soon to be happen.
Excellent. Well, we'll parcel that up in just a smidge, but we've got to do our weekly updates. So aside from theoretical, musical, educational somethings, what have you been up to, Telmo?
So it was reading week, so I did some reading for uni. That on the side, I've been working on some of the PGIP stuff. Well, we've got guys from Monster Media, which are related to Andy's studio.
Burfield Recording Studios.
Yes. We had an amazing meeting a couple of weeks ago, and we've been working and designing some sort of a website that goes with our music, deciding which sort of concepts we should take. So this week was a major advancement in terms of getting the logo done, getting ideas for a video for our first single. So it was very, very brainstormy in that sense.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to predict your logo, and you're going to tell me how many miles away I am. Okay, I've got a circle. There's a pyramid on it.
Oh, you wish.
There is a Monge 2 in front. How far away am I?
You're not very far. That's actually the design for the T-shirts. Thank you. You're hired.
Excellent. I will afford you my portfolio.
No, we've used that design before.
Oh, fair enough.
It's something that we want to keep, but we just decided that the logo needed to be something that's quite permeable. Is that a word? Sorry.
I know what you mean. I don't know how would you phrase that.
Something that's quite... you can use it in different manners. So
many
something that's
permutations.
That's it.
Permutable? I don't know. But the audience knows what you're on about, Telmo.
Please do let us know if you do know.
Any dates we might see some stuff appearing?
Well, you know, we've had this whole date coming up in September. Obviously, it didn't happen because COVID happened, so we had to cancel meetings. We had to cancel all the proper official releasing dates. So now we're aiming to December for the first single.
Nice one. And I've been on a bit of a fest recently of buying my friend's music in physical forms. Luke, that is you. Luke, please can I grab that Wordsworth vinyl, please? I'll pay you real money for it. Will there be physical PGIP for me to throw money at you for?
Absolutely. There will be at some point. We're looking at that next year, though, because there will be another single and an EP. So we're looking to have a whole series of physical copies to be released sometime next year.
Excellent. Well, I'll be on the waiting list for some of that.
Beautiful. Thank
nice
you.
One. Pete, what have you been cooking up? Have we got more tales from the loft this week?
We've got some, and there's just a little thing I wanted to mention. We've been having a bit more nostalgia. What I actually did was I found a small CD case envelope, you know, the type of thing.
Oh, those wallet things.
Wallet, yeah, those. Exactly that. That used to be my daughter's, and for some reason, amongst all her sort of... now 40 or whatever, all these various albums and bits and pieces from her childhood, I found one of my albums thinking, so that's where it is. And I'm convinced this CD's been lost for about 15 years or so. But anyway, it's come back into my possession, and I just thought I'd mention it because it was quite... I always thought this was quite unique. It's quite semi-obscure in some respects. So this is an artist called The King.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, he's a Welsh Elvis impersonator.
Okay.
And
I would not have called that.
Yeah, and I wasn't expecting that from you, Pete, yeah, honestly.
And the album was called The King, obviously, at Gravelands. So basically the album is The King, an Elvis impersonator, singing songs by dead people in the style of Elvis.
That's so niche and specific. I love it. What kind of tunes is he belting
right,
out?
Well, I've got the titles here, and you can guess the original artist and try and picture this okay. in the style of Elvis.
How accurate an Elvis impersonator is he? Is it a bit dodgy?
Absolutely spot on.
Oh, okay.
Really sounds, really good Elvis impersonator.
Oh, I bet he's great.
Okay.
So, the first track, Come As You Are.
Wow.
Come as you are. Yeah. I mean, but it works. The thing I've got to say about, and I'll go through the other tracks, it really works. I'm not an Elvis fan.
So how's the instrumental? Is it like Elvis-style 60s?
No, it's really well. It's kind of similar to the original tracks. Very faithful, very well played.
With Elvis on top.
With backing, big backing musicians, all the whole bit. So the next track, Love Will Tear Us Apart.
Yes. Yeah. Joy Division.
And then next one, Working Class Hero.
Excellent.
Next one, Whiskey in the Jar.
Oh, Thin Lizzy classic. Love it.
Next one, I've heard it through the grapevine.
So did I.
Next one, No Woman, No Cry.
Okay, that's got to be great.
Next one, All or Nothing.
Oh, I don't know, who's that?
I can't think.
Is that Whitney Houston?
No, it's no. I don't know. I feel quite embarrassed not to know. Next one, 20th Century Boy.
Right.
Oh yeah, that'll be a fun one.
T-Rex.
Yeah. And A Piece of My Heart.
Mm-hmm.
And The Dock of the Bay.
No
and
bells.
Then, Voodoo Child. And then final, Riders on the Storm.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. Actually, I think Riders on the Storm was kind of made for an Elvis kind of vibe.
Yeah.
That'd be
but
great.
I have to say, every track works a treat. I mean, it really does. It's just got something. I mean, one, I was never particularly such into any of the various artists, the original artists of these. And I was never really into Elvis, as I said earlier. But
combined,
the
unlikely forces.
It's just got something.
But he's a tribute artist, you know. It's something very specific. I remember when I first met Michael Jackson's tribute artist when I was a kid. You know, I even went to his bedroom and he had a snake in there. Hang on, let's not go into that.
Wait, where is this going, Tomo?
It's not going anywhere. Sorry, Pete.
Fair
Please
enough.
Keep going.
Okay. Yeah. Other than that, I've really just been in the store a lot because, you know, things are hotting up. We're rolling towards Christmas, and we're rolling into another lockdown. So
what a combination! I mean, yes. November's always tough, but like combined with the fun pandemic curveball, it's gonna suck.
Yeah, unfortunately, the customers are getting slightly hysterical, but it's sort of understandable because of all the uncertainty. We've got
but little Jimmy's Christmas.
Yeah, that's always going to be the rub. You can imagine people are trying to make the best of the Christmas period as they go towards it, and one of the crucial things is to hopefully have the presents under the tree. So that people are getting quite agitated at this stage, but we're doing our best to sort of soothe their nerves and try to assure them as best we can, but while sort of being, you know, sensibly honest to say that we're not going to guarantee anything.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. I guess little Jimmy will have to think about the greater good this Christmas a bit more.
Maybe he'll just, you know, have to stick with the pedals he's got.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. My week has actually been pretty cool, if I may jump into my week.
Please do.
It's been some big moments. Had a bit of a holiday, so I've had a break from the music retail world. And I've cut back on the habit, music retail habit. I mean, it's really bad. So I'm only working one day from November.
Congratulations.
I had something happened. In the ModCaf chat, the Facebook group, one of our friends, Anthony, posted about the new Modal Cobalt 8. And I thought, ooh, that's interesting, actually. And I clicked on the video, and I was interested in and enjoyed a synth video.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's coming back.
the passion.
Exactly, it's coming back at last. So I'm very excited about that. I'm not going to push it. I'm not going to say I'm going to make any music, but I was interested in a new synthesizer, much like I was interested in that theremin that we talked about last week. But let's actually pile into it, shall we?
Yes.
The Cobalt 8, same format as the Argon 8. I assume they'll be doing an X and a module, but they haven't actually said anything. But it's a VA, what do they call it, VA extended or something.
What, is that the algorithm? Is that the sort of...
Yeah, they had a little bit of, you know, one of those marketing-y, grabby, wordy somethings for it. But interestingly implemented, some kind of weird filters and stuff, but check out both... there's a video on the Andertons Music Company channel and also the Sonic State video. I watched those two, and the sound, that was pretty big.
So tell me, how do you feel when you listen to that?
I felt a special tingling in a certain... No, I didn't. No, it was... it just sounded so deep and deep and kind of lush. And not necessarily something we've never heard before or groundbreaking, but it was a new synthesizer. It made a cool noise, and I was quite excited about it. Actually, the Sonic State one, the opening patch, had a really guitar-like something. The attack was a bit weird, but the resonance had a plucked guitar string kind of vibe. Awesome.
Was that the
cool.
Sonic State demo?
Well, not full demo yet. First look. That was a Nick Batt designed patch, I think he said. But yeah, it sounded really guitar-like.
That was a very interesting patch. Mm. It did capture attention. I have to say, it does sound a bit more interesting than the Argon 8 in the respect of how it actually sounds.
Yeah, I like the flexibility, and they're not especially intuitive, but the amount of sound design options you have with these. The Cobalt would be mine, my choice of the two. I think, given that the similarity in the engines, the user experience will be quite similar, but I'm excited to see what people do with these.
It's physically identical, is it?
It's just a different colour.
Yes.
And obviously different text and things in certain bits. But no, pretty cool.
It
I
just
reckon.
Looks so nice and neat, and even the knobs are like so different from what you see from other brands doing it.
Yeah, it's something else, and I'm to be honest, I think the start with the super high end niche stuff that Modal came out with, it was cool, but I'm really more interested in what they're doing now in their slightly more expensive, cheaper stuff, because they did the Craft synth and the Sculpt. They feel a bit plasticky, and they didn't really knock my socks off, but Argon series and the Cobalt, which will probably be series, I think that's a really cool price point, really cool synthesizers.
Do you think they're finding their feet now?
Yeah, I think this is where they're at. I'd be interested to see if they do flesh out this range, maybe another something different. I'd be interested to see how they change their angle on the really high-end premium stuff, because we know they can do it. In terms of build quality, the Modal stuff was incredible. Just user experience was odd.
I'm convinced they're still the big ones are still available.
Yeah, they are. I mean, who's buying them?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we haven't had any of them in the store for 2 years, I want to say.
Yeah, I remember lugging those about on the display.
Is that still that sort of misconception that if you're going to spend some money, might as well spend some money on the original thing, or, you know, on a Moog or a...
Ooh. Jesus Christ.
Is everything all right?
Did we just get egged? I think I got egged.
Really?
Yeah. You guys are right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've been egged.
Is that an egg?
Yeah.
What?
Is any in the car?
No, it's very bizarre.
That's going to be gross, but hopefully it rains tonight. Anyway, being egged, that's fun.
That's a bit annoying.
What? Okay, I've got it on the front of the car, actually.
Have you?
Yeah.
A bit of egg?
Yeah.
Really?
Lots of egg. It was a whole thing of eggs or something.
Yeah.
What the funk?
Oh, well, at least the window wasn't open. That would have been very unpleasant.
Yeah, yes.
What were we on about?
Argon 8.
Rack Addicts, coming back to you after being egged. That's a new one.
Can you please keep this? I think I was mentioning something about, you know, people actually, if they're going to spend some money, they maybe would rather prefer spending on the real deal instead of.
So there's definitely some people making some cool stuff in the really high-end market, like the Quantum and the Iridium are definitely compelling for some people. It's just personal, really. I think the classics it'll be a bit more of an investment, and I reckon you'd be able to shift it a lot easier if you did change your mind.
Of course.
That's the strength in that kind of department.
Exciting news, then.
Definitely. Was there another... We've got the Werkstatt, or the Werkstatt. I don't know how to talk about it. Was there one other thing that I did see? No, there wasn't. I've totally forgotten about it. Anyway, way back, not way back, but quite a while back, Moog released the Workstat, which was a little DIY, really cheap little monosynth. Actually, no, at the time it wasn't really cheap, was it? It was more like, what, 400 quid?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, is there anything that Moog do that's cheap?
Yeah. But now, re-released with the CV expander that plugged into the little, what do you call them, breadboard patch cable patch point thingies. Still build it yourself, 199 quid. I think that's a much more compelling option than we've seen before.
So how does the engine on this differ to something like the Mother 32, would you say?
Very good question. I don't actually know. It's probably going to be the same kind of sized surface mount type stuff. It's just one PCB jobby.
Well, I think there's much less work put onto the actual the physical side of the engine. So
assembly. Doing it yourself, that probably saves a bit of money.
Exactly.
In terms of making it.
And also the looks, you know, you don't get the nice big chunky knobs.
Simple push buttons for the keyboards as
That's right. Yep. But if you just all that you want is just that little Moog sound, huge Moog sound, this is pretty much covers it up.
Yeah, I'm excited for it just because of the price point. I mean, I probably won't have one myself because I've got the Subharmonicon, it's pretty cool.
I hadn't realised the other one had gone away. I was aware that we had a few and then they have sold and then this has come out and we're going to have some more.
Mm. Bear with me a sec. I'm just going to turn my engine on and wipe my windscreen before it gets dried egg on it.
Fair enough. Wow. They might do the same.
Where are my keys?
Yeah. You know, let's all do it.
Do you get any egg, Talma?
I did not.
Actually, it's going to...
This is one of the strangest things that ever happened to me.
Strange things happen to one when we're doing a Rack Addicts podcast.
Oh, it's so gross.
Brought to you by Eggs. Free range.
It's the sort of thing where you're going to want torrential rain.
Yeah. Just use up all of my wiper fluid on that. Okay, that's looking a bit better.
I haven't got any wiper fluid. It's run out.
Oh, no.
Every time a car is passing by, I'm just looking at it like, what the fuck do you want?
Yeah, we do have a lot of yobs around here, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Damn it.
There's nothing I could say about that. Yeah, the answer is just yes.
Yeah. Oh, well. Right. That will conclude our little synthy news section. I think, Telmo, if you've got some of that theory knowledge to unleash from your recent educationaloids, fire away. What have you been learning today?
Well, I can really just share a little bit of my experience throughout the last couple of weeks with this Fusion Orchestra module that I've been taking with Dr. PhD Joel Bell. He's also my personal guitar tutor. It's very interesting because last year I was part of this ensemble called the Fusion Orchestra, where it's an orchestra or an ensemble of musicians that was had a conductor, but it was ruled off by actual improvisation. So you know how conductors normally hold that little really long pencil.
The baton.
That's right. And they just, they're scoring the tempo. It depends if it's Bernstein or you know, every conductor has its own way of showcasing his activity. But this sort of orchestration is very much different. And it was developed here in the UK by a gentleman called Pete Whitehead, if I don't remember. Well, I'll send you the link. This is all related to signs. So you don't actually need a baton. All you need is hand gestures.
Oh, sign language style-y.
Exactly. So you would have a motif or a one piece, a one sheet of music, just a single page with something for the musicians to hold on to, something to start with. And what you would have...
How dare you!
What you would have is the conductor actually giving you signs to do a certain thing within the orchestra. So I don't know if you guys can see me, but...
Not at all. There's egg in my window. I can't see through it.
A thumbs up would mean that you can solo. If you give four fingers vertically, that means you have to harmonize a certain player. If the conductor is asking you with a hand to ask for more, that means give me another riff on top of what's already happening. So it's very interesting. There's over 2,000 signs for this method. And professional orchestras still, up to this day, are having a terrible time to actually understand what some of these conductors are working on. But what I found it so interesting is the organic relation symbiosis between a conductor's point of view of seeing music and a musician's output into the music itself.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you mix this way of looking at classical music where you have a guy telling you what to do, which is not really the way it goes, but that's how it's perceived, mixed with jazz, which is everyone's got a little bit of a flair to what you're doing. And, you know, if it's not what the conductor thinks it is, then it's fine because he's asking you to make up your own thing. So Frank Zappa did this. Frank Zappa was a one of the pioneers in this. Miles Davis in the 70s. And yeah, so it's just really interesting to see how you can make music this way. So that's my input about music, just knowledge in general. In terms of theory, I mean, I don't have much to talk about this week, but I would like to get into a bit of harmonic analysis at some point. I know it sounds a bit daunting, but it's actually easier than what you would think.
Well, if you can dumb it down to my level, then I reckon it's a success. But no, an orchestra of improvising musicians, that sounds pretty cool. I mean, as somebody whose greatest fear is being asked to improvise, it sounds like hell on earth, but it'd be quite fun to watch.
Yeah, it is very entertaining. It's good to be able, actually, it's actually a good experience for you if you're not used to improvise, to be led by someone, as it's a call and response thing with the conductor.
Sounds pretty cool. Can we find any of this on the internet?
Absolutely, absolutely. You can find out some of the Frank Zappa's conducting. You can look at Butch Walker's as well, a conducting style. Or if not, you can just look at Hand Signal. Was it Hand Signage? Conducting.
Awesome. Well, what you might want to do, actually, is go find some of that on YouTube. Open that in a new tab. Keep it playing in the background, because now we're going to venture somewhere else, somewhere led by our space correspondent. It is time, of course, for Luke's Spacey Bit. Every time. I love it. A little bit of a pre-prepared thing from Luke for us today. Take it away.
Hello, academics. I am Luke, and this is the part where I talk to you about my favourite place, space. With the second UK lockdown looming, the weather turning grey, and Cyberpunk 2077 being delayed until December 10th, at the earliest, I thought it would be nice to share some positive space news and give you my take on the week's occurrences. Monday the 2nd of November will mark 20 years of constant occupation aboard the International Space Station. The first components of the ISS were officially launched in 1998. The Russian functional cargo block module named Zarya was delivered to orbit on a Proton rocket to be joined 2 weeks later by the NASA Unity module delivered by the space shuttle STS-88 Endeavour. The two units were fused together, starting the decade-long construction process of the largest orbital structure that humanity has built to date. The rest is history. Zarya and Unity now sit deep within the centre of the 109-metre-long station, orbiting the Earth at a modest 27,600 kilometres per hour, or 17,150 miles per hour, and providing a home in the harshest possible environment to a revolving international team of spacefarers without pause since the 2nd of November 2000. At the time of recording, 240 individuals have lived and conducted experiments on the ISS, taking part in over 2,700 individual investigations and over 230 spacewalks. At a cost of $4 billion per year, however, the ISS is not without its criticisms and detractors. Certainly, space development is an area of public spending that requires a large amount of funding, and attaining that funding is incredibly competitive. It is no news to any space nerd that budget constraints can often be the difference between a project launching successfully or being consigned to history as a pipe dream. One of the great challenges of any scientific endeavour is providing the results to retain investment before the pot of resources dries up. This problem is only magnified for the exorbitant fees associated with astronomy, astrophysics, astrobiology, and space travel in general. Critics have argued that the ISS exists to maintain a human foothold in space at a cost to projects that do not actually require human hands or direct observation to conduct. Billions of dollars spent in maintaining the station could have been put to use on orbital observatories, remote research craft, or manned missions to the moon. This is valid criticism, and the cost of the ISS should serve as a lesson moving forward on how to deploy funding in the most optimal way, especially in terms of generating a return. However, I will be quick to point out that the science doesn't always yield immediate practical results. Without a permanent home for humans in space, we wouldn't be able to conduct observations on the impact of living in microgravity on the human body. If nothing else, the ISS has been one of few places where such research can be conducted for any length of time. ESA's Samantha Cristoforetti and NASA's Scott Kelly spent 200 and 340 days respectively aboard the ISS, participating in many informative studies on the long-term effects of microgravity. Kelly's study had the added benefit of a like-for-like control subject in his twin brother Mark Kelly, who remained on Earth under NASA observation for the duration of Scott's mission. Beyond the development of tools, material, and life sciences, there are also the sociological and psychological phenomena of having our own orbital habitat to consider. The ISS is enduring proof that science can be conducted around politics, that cooperation between nations is indeed possible. The ISS has had continuous involvement from Roscosmos, NASA, the Canadian Space Agency, the ESA, and JAXA, just to name a few. On a different note, it has also served as an example of humanity doing our level best to be anything but serious or grandiose in the most hostile and inspiring of environments. Astronaut Chris Hadfield's musical numbers earned him internet fame, while fans of The Expanse will note with a smile the ISS espresso machine sent up in 2015 with a coffee bulb designed by Lavazza and Argotech to deliver quote-unquote good coffee in space. It has also been the site of several firsts in space travel, including but not limited to the first crewed commercial flight by SpaceX and the first all-female spacewalk occurring just this past year. As we look back on the ISS, I am tempted to view it fondly, as I am with all space endeavours, simply for the technological achievement they represent. There is no doubt that space science is a constant struggle with funding, and with hindsight it is easy to say where bottlenecks have perhaps slowed the pace of progress in competing areas, but I think it is possible to appreciate that and admire the fruits of labour for the projects that did go ahead. After all, if we marry together these two ideas, then we really will make some headway into the great unknown.
Nice one. A pre-prepared thing, since we unfortunately can't have Luke in person today. Perhaps next week, when we travel to stars beyond. Anyway, that normally brings us sort of to the end of our little podcastio, which unfortunately we need a new name for this segment, because Telmo and I have both run out of YouTube recommendations. So here is our general multimedia recommendation. I need to think of a snappier title, and I will let you know when I've thought of something potentially more alliterative or humorous. Has anybody got anything queued up? Because as we've said, I'm flagging. I got nothing. What do I do with my
Come on,
evening?
Pete.
Right, I'm just going to grab one straight out of the endless YouTube subscription.
You've got the biggest list in the world.
How to egg parked cars. No. Okay, what have you got?
Right, this is quite a simple one, a very short series on YouTube. Again, a general easy watch. The title of the channel is called The Modern House.
Ooh.
So it features mainly some of the artists, architects, and general creatives, and it highlights each episode one of their homes that they've renovated, designed, done up. Converted or whatever, they're not particularly grandiose type of places, but they are all have got a very sort of modern sort of aesthetic to them. Each person talks about their home, their thoughts, the thought process in how they where it is. And these are only they're all relatively short. I mean, some of them are literally, 5 minutes long.
Nice one.
And there's not a great deal. I want to say maybe 20 or 30 videos in total. And again, they're very laid back. And But it's nice. It's not sort of that sort of ridiculous sort of property porn where you're looking at a £40 million LA hilltop home or anything like that. These are some of these are sort of small sort of flats in Bermondsey sort of type things.
Oh, nice. You know, a little bit more achievable.
Yeah, a little sort of tucked away, little Victorian terraced or a flat on the 10th floor, but it's, you know, special things have been done to it. But yeah, it's just an easy watch as I like to do, you know, something that you don't have to put too much effort and thought. You can just have it, you know, just run it just to fill some time or something like that.
Yeah, cool. Well, I've been running through the back catalogue of Never Too Small, so that might be quite a nice one to move on to. I did think of something that I've been spending much too much of my time looking at, a website called bikepacking.com. If you are unfamiliar with bike packing, it involves strapping a tent and a sleeping bag to your bike and going on a really long ride and bringing cooking equipment and stuff. It's just tenting, but on a bike. I've mistimed my interest in such a thing with the seasons, but I'm hoping I can accumulate the knowledge and gear to get out on some big old adventures once it's not cold, wet and miserable, as so often happens here in England. But if you are of a similar persuasion, or you just like camping and or biking, bikepacking.com. Take a gander. Telmo, you got anything for us today?
Well, yeah, following on the easy watching recommendations from Pete and, of course, yours, I just want to say that Friends, I'm watching Friends. Friends, I am watching Friends. And
it's
I know
a comfort blanket show, isn't it?
It is. It is. And to be honest, you know, I'm turning 28 in 2 months. And only in the last year I've started to... I actually heard of Friends. You know, this is crazy. Everyone's like coming to me like, how come you've never watched Friends? No, I didn't. But I'm already in the 9th season. So I'm literally almost
powering
almost
through.
Absolutely. And it's easy watching, as you said. Incredible characters. I mean, in terms of sitcom, is a staple of TV and series in general. Joey, how are you doing? great character. Yeah, so powering through those and having loads of fun with the missus. I can tell you what I'm going to watch tonight after this.
Is it a bit more Friends?
Oh, probably. But then I'll watch a bit of Borat, the second. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward for that. My wife.
Nice one. Well, you all keep safe out there if you're in England. Enjoy lockdown 2.0. I know we won't. But do be sure to find us next week in the same bad time, same bad place. Rack Addicts After Hours. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.